KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Dr. Joni DeBrito with Focus on the Family joins us once again. Thanks so much for routinely checking in with us on various issues impacting our families, Dr. DeBrito.
You're welcome. So great to be with you, Steve.
Now, for those who didn't hear us mention coming into this throughout the last couple of days as we promote the broadcast, we're going to be talking about recognizing signs of depression and or suicide and just how to deal with some of the things that happen. I mean, and there's so many different ways that this impacts our lives, Dr. DeBrito. I mean, I have a wife and we had six kids. And anyone who's had several kids probably knows that, you know, postpartum depression, which is typically a temporary thing, is experienced. But there's so many other ways that people experience mild to heavy cases of depression. And, you know, they can last a short time, a long time, and they come from, you know, all different aspects of life. You know, let's dive into what types maybe of some significant losses that can trigger depression or even suicidal thoughts.
Sure. Well, loss is a part of life. And the most obvious one that we think about, Steve, is the loss of a loved one. And obviously, that's a very significant loss that often can make people feel very, what we call dysregulated, kind of out of sorts, maybe feel in crisis. And it's extremely normal for people to go through a period of feeling depressed, sometimes getting to the point of feeling suicidal when they lose a loved one. Now, I'm not suggesting that it's normal that that most people feel suicidal when they lose a loved one, but many people do feel depressed for a period of time. That's actually part of that grief experience that people have. And so that's normal. But there are so many other kinds of losses that are significant. We have seen many natural disasters via changes in our weather, and you've had people losing their homes and their businesses. We had a pandemic we went through where people lost jobs and kids were not able to go to school, so they lost all of those important things that they might have been doing in whatever grade they were in during those few years. And then there are what we call existential losses that can cause depression and suicidal thoughts as well. The loss of a dream, the loss of hope, the loss of a goal that you had in mind for your entire life, and now it's passed you by and you realized, I can't do this anymore. Those are all significant ways that people can be affected by loss and therefore feel depressed and in some cases feel suicidal.
Now, for those that are around others that may be experiencing this, are there always outward signs of depression that others can be watching for?
There usually are. Some people are good at hiding things, but they're usually not good at hiding everything that someone might see. So some people will be able to put on a smiling face when they're feeling in their lowest places, but people around them may still see things such as someone who used to be engaging with people a lot and now they're isolating more, or especially younger people spending a lot of time online, which is highly correlated with kids being more depressed and anxious and thinking about suicide. And also if people are having trouble sleeping or if they're eating, losing a lot of weight or gaining a lot of weight. And then very often people will make statements that and they don't really even realize exactly what they're saying. But if you listen, they're saying, I don't really want to be here. So they might say something such as, sometimes I wish I would just fall asleep and never wake up. Well, if you really think about that, they're saying, I don't want to be conscious. And usually it's because the world is a painful place for them at this point in time. So the best thing that you can do if you see some signs is to say, hey, here are some things I've noticed, and it makes me worried for you or concerned for you, Because most people, even if they're in a really deep, deep pit themselves, they don't want to hurt other people via their depression or suicidal thoughts. And so it really helps them to hear how they're affecting other people, not in a shaming, judgmental way, but more in a gentle, I care about you, I love you, and I'm really worried for you.
Now, we started with talking about, you know, several different losses that can trigger depression or even suicidal thoughts. And, you know, many of those are very natural things that happen in our lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not unnatural. I, though, consider the loss of a child. What, yeah, and actually, let's include abortion in that. Loss of a child, whether before birth or a youth, it's just an unnatural thing that can absolutely trigger depression in a good portion of the family.
Absolutely. And whether it be a miscarriage, an abortion, or a post-birth death, something that in hospitals they call clinically a fetal demise, which as a previous hospital social worker always really bothered me because I felt like it was important to say, so what you're saying is a baby died, because that's what really happened. Those kinds of things are enormously stressful for people. And actually, it's about 20% of maternal deaths. In other words, either pre-birth or afterbirth, like people who are pregnant and have pregnancy crises or what have you, are due to suicide. So it's not just that people, women who lose babies are depressed, which is normal, but they can feel very suicidal as well. And even including abortion, where people could say, well, you made that choice. But we know that very few people make those choices voluntarily. It's usually in a state of high crisis and very also often related to misinformation that they receive. And then after the fact, they realize what's happened. You mentioned that you have six children. What very often happens for people who've had an abortion is that they're kind of, they feel like they've done the grieving process until they actually have their own children later on in life. And then they realize what they've given up. And so they can have a delayed depression for that as well.
Well, it's important that we recognize, you know, if we're going to care for it, it's important that we recognize the signs of abortion, what may cause abortion, and, you know, other things that people may, you know, well, they may make the assumption that one gender of the two genders that there are may experience depression more than the other. Is that the case?
It really is not the case. Pregnancy losses in general, I think you're referring to pregnancy losses. Is that correct?
Well, I'm just saying, no, men, you know, just in general, okay. Experiencing depression, men and women, is it an equal thing? Or, you know, I think not from anything I've read, but if I was going to guess, I would guess the general population would suppose one of the genders, men and women, experience depression more than the other. But is that the case?
Not necessarily. We know, for instance, that there are more women who try to die by suicide than men. However, there are more men who actually die by suicide. So unfortunately something that is a condition that affects men and women across the board. I was going to mention, since we were talking about pregnancy, that it's really unfortunate that very often when there's a pregnancy loss, that men are excluded from the support that's given to women. And you have to remember, let's say this is a planned pregnancy and a baby is born and dies shortly after birth. That father just lost a child, it is completely unfair to assume that only the wife is grieving, only the mother is grieving, and that father needs just as much support. But in general, men and women are both capable of becoming very depressed and suicidal. And, you know, we see higher numbers in certain populations. So, for instance, there are higher numbers of older men in the more elderly category that die by suicide and often have depression that contributes to that. There are some ages, teenage girls often are reporting more depression than teenage boys. But again, is that just because girls tend to talk more and report more and are more emotive and therefore come to the attention of people? Probably, because we know plenty of young men are also very depressed and thinking about suicide, but they just are not as likely to reach out and talk to someone.
Well, you know, before we go to a break, I want to mention something I've talked about on this show and you know, holding up a mirror to myself and looking at some of the things that, you know, we say and do that may be indicators of depression. You know, I've said often, you know, just the dealing, you know, routinely on this show with issues that impact the state of New Mexico and our listeners, as, you know, we broadcast locally in Albuquerque and across the state. But I would see now, I wouldn't say the things that I bring up, and I say, man, it's more of a weariness than a depression. And what keyed me into this to bring it up was, you know, you mentioned someone who says, you know, I just don't want to wake up. And, you know, as a Christian, I'll often, you know, say, come Jesus, come, or, you know, and, you know, not only for him to come, but I know that to not be here would be to be home and be in a better place. But I don't feel, you know, like I'm in a depression or so I think as we see some of those signs or some things people can say that may not be or are they?
Well, and remember that you've heard this before, and we probably say this to our children a million times when they're growing up. It's not what you said, it's how you said it. So, of course, there are times when we all say, oh, God, Jesus, can you just come back now? We're ready. And that doesn't mean we're depressed or suicidal. But when you're talking with someone who is really depressed and showing you that in their mood and their isolation and the fact that they haven't showered for 3 days and they're not taking care of themselves, and then they say, I just wish I would, you know, die and not be here anymore, or go to sleep and not be here anymore. That's very a little bit different. But that was a really good point to bring up, because you could hear a Christian say that in a very intentional way, and that doesn't necessarily indicate that that person is depressed.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you just tuned in, we're visiting with Dr. Joni DeBrito with Focus on the Family. We're going to take a quick break. Dr. DeBrito, can you stay with us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. We've talked about indications and what to look for. We're going to come back and talk about treatment, how to deal with it, how to address it when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect.
In the midst of a conversation with Dr. Joni DeBrito with Focus on the Family, recognizing signs of depression and or suicide. And in our first segment, we talked about how to recognize some of those signs and actually brought on by loss primarily. We mentioned job, home, maybe loss of a marriage or a child, a loss of hope, of a goal, of a dream. One of the things we didn't mention is traumatic things that happen. You know, we might be in an accident or be victim of a violent crime or you know, maybe have witnessed horrific things in warfare or as a first responder. There's so many other things, you know, that create a post-traumatic stress disorder. And with that can be depression. So all, whether it's PTSD or depression brought on by some kind of a loss, Dr. DeBrito, should everyone who ever goes through something that would include a pretty major loss or have been involved in some sort of trauma, should it be a blanket? Well, you need therapy.
Not necessarily. Definitely you need help and support, but help and support can come from a lot of places, therapy being one of them. And we certainly have plenty of wonderful therapeutic interventions to help people with any number of different diagnoses, including PTSD or any of the depressive disorders, et cetera. But there are also other ways that people are able to address those kinds of issues in their lives. So it could be that a group could be a good place for someone to be. For instance, I know I've done a lot of work with families who have experienced the suicide of a loved one. And of course, that is a major crisis in a family. And very often there might be one or two people who go to therapy, but others who don't go to therapy and instead maybe go and attend a group. And it could be a group led by a therapist, or it could be a group led by other people who have experienced the same thing. So therapy is certainly one of the great resources that people have available, but it's not always what's needed. What you want to look at is the degree to which a person's normal life is being disrupted. If a person is not able to eat or sleep or function or go to work, or it's a young person who can't go to school, or a person who's emotionally inconsolable, then that indicates that therapy would probably be really helpful. And also a check-in with a physician, just in case there are any other medical issues that might be complicating what's going on for an individual person.
Okay. And actually, before we move on, somewhat in our conversation, we're defining therapy as something that is overseen by someone in the medical field. Is it true that there are plenty of ways you can experience therapy outside of the medical field?
Absolutely. The vast majority of people like myself, who are trained in intervening with people with mental health issues, are not medical practitioners. The medical practitioners that do provide some sort of mental health help are either psychiatrists or psychiatric nurse practitioners who are specially trained to be able to help with medication and also help with behavioral concerns. Now, let me be clear that because you go to therapy does not necessarily mean that you will be required to take any medication. That is something that keeps a lot of people away from seeking therapy because they're either afraid of the things they've heard about medication, or they feel like, I don't want someone to just slap me on medication and feel like that's the answer, because it's not going to be. Even people who are prescribed medication typically need the medication along with therapy in order to get better. But many, many people go through therapy with people like myself, who I am a doctor, but I'm not a medical doctor. And there are plenty of master's level therapists as well, who are not medically trained and are just providing behavioral interventions as well, or as opposed to medical interventions.
Okay. And you touched on something I want to bring up, because there are people in the body of Christ who go through treatment for depression that includes properly prescribed medication. Mm-hmm. And it's a thing in the Christian community. It can be a stigma where someone may be really kind of pressed for agreeing to go under a doctor's care for depression that includes medication. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. It's one of my big frustrations in the church in general, because the truth is that, as we see in the Bible, the condition of depression is something that's been around forever. It's not a new thing. And we know that people have died throughout history from depression and then suicide related to depression. And so here's the way I look at it. We have these human bodies that have all different systems. And one of the most important things in our body that runs everything in our body is our brain. And why people think that you can have problems or dysfunctions in every other part of the body, but not the brain, is such a mystery to me. So the same people who would never say to a person who's on insulin, for instance, for diabetes, hey, you know, get off that medication. You don't need medication. You have Jesus. They wouldn't think of saying that. But those same people may say to someone, oh, that stuff is, you know, it's bad stuff. It's going to kill you, what have you. You shouldn't be on medication. You should just pray and all of your troubles will go away. That completely negates the fact that we know that for some people, depression is an organic issue. It's biological. There are abnormalities in the brain that can create depression. There are also many different diseases that have as a side effect depression because of the changes that are happening in the brain. But in addition to that, you can take someone with a perfectly healthy brain that has no pre-existing condition in the brain that might cause the depression and expose them to a lot of trauma. And it's completely normal that they may become depressed because of that. And that actually trauma changes the anatomy and physiology of the brain to some extent. We know that there are lots of changes that can happen. And there, I say to some extent because it's different for every person. For some people, it's significant. For some people, it's not as significant. But the point is that those changes then may require a medical intervention, i.e., a medication. And so we need to be supportive of people, making sure that, yes, of course, the same way that you would advise someone seeking a doctor for anything, make sure you're paying attention to what they're prescribing. Make sure that you are staying in contact with them. If you start having any awful side effects, you need to call them immediately. But we need to trust that there are times when medication is completely appropriate for certain mental health conditions.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, someone who may hear, well, you know, well, just pray and not to discount pray. Prayer should be part of the healing process. However, in the same way, you know, when you fall off your skateboard and your arm bends the wrong way, you wouldn't look at someone with a disjointed elbow and say, just pray. God has given us the wisdom to medically correct that, to provide painkillers, things to prevent infection, and other medications to assist in this area of therapy when it comes to depression. Now, we mentioned the church, and there's other organizations. How can the church and these, you know, other organizations assist with those that are experiencing depression or suicidal thoughts?
Well, the first thing is to be honest about the fact that these things exist in all communities, including in the Christian community. The fact that we have the hope of Jesus does not mean that we are not affected by the things of this world. We, of course, are. And so people need to be talking more about depression and other mental health issues from the pulpit, telling stories, allowing people in congregations to tell their own stories, not only of struggling with various mental health issues, but also recovering. There are so many great treatments available, medical and non-medical, to help people recover from the really significant kinds of mental health issues, depression, anxiety, PTSD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Those are the kinds of things that really are disruptive to people's lives. And there is so much help available. So churches need to encourage people to get help with those kinds of things, the very same way that they will often encourage couples who are experiencing marital difficulty to get help for their marriages. And it's also helpful if they're able to have some support groups available for people who might be struggling with addictions or any other kind of mental health issue.
Okay. If people haven't, you know, thought this out in advance prior to being, you know, falling into the midst of an area, whether it's PTSD, or just experiencing loss that leads to depression, what are some of the things they can do to find the help they need?
So Focus on the Family has a lot of resources for people. The first one is that there are licensed counselors and pastoral counselors available to provide consultations free of charge for anyone who calls with any sort of mental health question. And a person can call 855-771-4357 and give their contact information, and a licensed mental health professional or a pastoral counselor will call them back within 48 business hours. And that number is available Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. in the Mountain Standard Time, non-holidays. And of course, you can adjust for your time zone.
Okay, let me give also, that. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to give the number again real quick. It's, sure. Just in case you ran to get a piece of paper and a pen, here it is. 855-771-4357. 855-771-4357. Go ahead, Dr. DeBrito.
Then also online at focusonthefamily.com, you can go there and you can search mental health, or you can go to the Get Help page. And the Get Help page will lead you to find a counselor if you feel like, hey, I feel like some counseling might be helpful. The Focus has the Christian Counselors Network, and the people on that network have all been vetted by Focus on the Family to have the education and the credentialing that we're looking for. And they have a variety of different specialties there, but you can put in your zip code and find out if there's someone or several people in your area that you can choose from to go to seek some therapy. Or if you are in an area that is not as populated, which certainly in the state of Mexico, there are plenty of areas that are very small. And so there might not be someone in your area, but you can put in the state of New Mexico. Or if you're listening in other states, you can put in your state. And it will bring up everyone around the country who is licensed to talk with people in your state. And that may be a longer list for you. And then you can read people's profiles, give them a call, and kind of find out if that might be a counselor that might be helpful for you.
Very good. Well, we've been visiting with Dr. Joni DeBrito with Focus on the Family, Recognizing Signs of Depression and or Suicide. And if you missed a portion of it, watch for it on the archive at abqconnect.online. Dr. DeBrito, thanks again so much for your time.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Steve.
And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.